This is Vatican Radio, and I am Lydia O'Kane. Sister Mary Doris, a recent speaker at the Voices of Faith event in the Vatican, describes how the founding of the Siena House shelter in the Bronx for 27 homeless women and babies has been for her a journey of faith. She tells me her story.
You've called it a journey of faith for the past 26 years. Just tell me why.
Well, actually, it's all about listening to God's voice for me. And so from the initial start of my vocation to religious life through teaching, well, actually I was 18 when I entered, but through teaching high school, secondary and elementary school for 18 years, doing vocation work, which was kind of like a jumping off point for me because I had to explain religious life to young women who were interested in joining the congregation. And it made me stop and say, you know, I really need to stop myself and reflect on my own vocation. So I decided that I was going to make a 30-day retreat. So that's like silence for 30 days. No communications except with God in nature, because we did a lot of outside walking and praying together and finding quiet time, which is like such a blessing. But during that time, it was a Jesuit retreat, actually, and at the end of which there's a surrender prayer, and it's all about asking God to remove from you anything that is taking you from Him. And in that retreat, I became convinced, and speaking of voices, so God's voice within me, that I needed to work with the poor. And so when I left retreat, I went straight to our mother house, and I was on the line, at the buffet line, and two of our sisters came behind me and said, if you're thinking about taking on a new ministry, why don't you come to the Bronx with us? So another voice. So I did. I went the next day. I called them, and I said, look, when can I come? So I went, and I remember the noises of the fire engines and the police cars and all the noises of the street, and I thought, I don't think I want here, just having come from this beautiful, serene retreat. But again, something inside me said, you need to be here.
So a call, really.
Voices that I speak, in terms of voices of faith, I believe that it is, I call it a journey of faith. My experience in life is a journey of faith. Mm-hmm. It's responding to the call, really.
Yeah. But as you say, you also have to listen as well. You have to listen out for it.
Correct. You have to be available to listen. And sometimes we get too caught up in what's going on. So the retreat for me was a gift.
Mm. Now this house has been going for 26 years now.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the women who come, where they've come from, what journeys they've had that have brought them to your house.
Well, actually, they come from all parts of the world. We've had women from China, Guatemala, El Salvador, and all over our country. Anybody who's homeless, who comes to New York, finds a place or can find a shelter, because the state of New York has mandated a law that says we have to house the homeless. So when the women come to us, they go through an intake program through New York City's intake for homeless, all homeless families. And when they come to us, they're either pregnant or they have a child under the age of two. They come from domestic violence situations where they have experienced being beaten by the baby's father, sometimes by the mother, by someone in the family. They're living in an overcrowded situation. They just came from another country and they just are lost. They have nobody. They come from places where they've been rejected by their families. We have a woman that came to us. She was living with her boyfriend for 2 years. She got pregnant and he put her out. The mother didn't want her at that point because, in a sense, their culture, she was spoiled. So then when they come to us, they're very broken women because they don't feel good about having to bring their babies to a shelter. So we try very hard to provide a place that's safe, that's more than a shelter. One particular story that turned me around was when I went to the Bronx, I started an adult ed program because there were a lot of young people in the street that were hanging out that had not finished school. So I started an adult ed program in that very neighborhood. By the way, the neighborhood that I'm in is considered one of the poorest congressional districts in the United States. It's called Highbridge. And when I saw the young people out there, I knew I needed to do something. So we started this adult ed program. But in my class, there were a lot of young women who were in the predicament of either being pregnant at a very young age or having a small child and not being able to go to school because of that. So we used to take turns, literally. I would have a class of moms, maybe 12, and then two or three of them would take the babies outside to another room, and then I would teach, and then another group would go. So we managed to do that. But anyway, I became very aware of the struggle that these women were having in finding safe places to live. They would go from house to house, and when the people they were living with got tired of the babies crying at night, you know, you need to get out of here. One day, a young mother came to me. She was like 20. I didn't even know if she was 20. She was sobbing. She grabbed me, and she just told me that her baby, her five-month-old baby, had been sexually abused by her sister's boyfriend, with whom she was living. She was living with her sister, and she was devastated because at that moment she didn't know what to do. And it turned the course of my life around because it made me literally scream inside, "Why, we got to get her out of here. We got to get her out of that situation." So it kind of got to me so badly that I even started looking around because I lived in an apartment in the neighborhood with two other sisters. And I started looking around thinking, I wonder if there's any houses around here. I could just even bring a few of them in. But the next thing that happened was our community, our congregation, had a meeting, which we have regularly. It's a general chapter meeting where we talk about the issues of the day and what we need to be paying attention to. And we committed ourselves at that meeting. It was 1988 to commitment to the poor and, in particular, the homeless. And so I thought, oh, here's another push for me to do something. So a group of us got together and said, what are we going to do? I said, we got to find a house. That was my cry. Then I was invited to the Diocesan Synod in New York City. They have a meeting of all the churches in the diocese. And I had an opportunity to get up to an open mic to speak about the plight of poor pregnant women. And it wasn't enough because they had a proposal out to support the right to life, and it wasn't enough for me. So I just said, we need an amendment or an addendum to that. And so I left the mic and said, I made the suggestion that we needed to put in a statement that the church was willing to support these young mothers who needed to keep their babies, who wanted to keep their babies. And then the cardinal got me later, and the truth was he added the amendment. He made it possible for us to get an old convent in the neighborhood that was empty. And it came about.
The rest is history, as they
yes,
say.
Yes, yes.
Mm. Have you worked on programs for babies, moms, together?
Correct.
What's the... Talk to us about that.
Right. Well, we do have social services. We do have housing specialists who help the women find housing. We have child care. And we also bring in workshops and people to come in to present workshops, let's say, on parenting, on responsible parenting, on budgeting, on preventing, abuse, if they are in an abusive situation, people that have been in domestic violence situations and working with them to help them not to get into those situations. But recently, in 2013, I got a call from Carnegie Hall through the Department of Homeless Services. Sister, would you be interested in a project that Carnegie Hall is starting? It's called the Lullaby Project, and they help the moms write lullabies for their babies. I thought, wow, that's beautiful. So they came, and for the past 4 years, we have had artists from Carnegie Hall come and help our women to write lullabies. We do ahead of time, before they come, we have them write poems or desires, hopes for their babies. And then when the artists come, they do one-on-one. They bring their instruments. We had a woman one time who brought her harp up our steps. We have a lot of steps and all kinds of musical instruments. And then have the women pick out the music, the instrument that they play. They give them a demonstration. But anyway, we've had it for 4 years, and it is an absolutely beautiful gift for us. I called it a gift of music. But it's a moment in time when the women who were struggling in all these various ways stop and focus and really give their heart to this baby, and they're cherishing their babies at that moment. And for me, it's like the greatest gift, because it's like almost nothing else matters right now except pouring my love out on this precious gift. And so we did, the women we had, I think we had 10 of them who did it this year.
You have 27 women at the moment in the house. When is it a case that they will move on and there'll be another group of women
that
will come in?
Correct.
It's on a kind of
as soon as
basis.
One moves out. Now the difficult if one moves out, we have to, according to the city, because the city of New York right now is at an all, there are over 54,000 homeless families in New York City. And so as soon as one woman moves out, we have a call or we get something on the internet. They want that room like today. So it's a definite need. But the women stay with us until we are able, we help them to find housing. And there's some of it is subsidized, some of it is supportive housing. We have a lot of mentally ill women. We have women who are formerly drug addicted, domestic violence. So we try to get them into programs that are going to help them before they move out, to connect them to these programs.
Right. Just one other question. Looking at the facilities and the programs that you provide, would psychology be one of those? Because obviously the women that are coming have to deal with an awful lot of issues.
Absolutely. Emotional and psychological, absolutely. So our social workers refer them for therapy. They receive therapy. But not only that, we have a group of volunteers. We have a volunteer nurse who comes 2 days a week. We also have a child psychologist who comes, and she has her doctorate actually in early childhood development, and tries to work with the moms on that. But the social workers, the case managers, work very closely with the women to try to help them through. But we are advocating right now for more mental health services for our women. That's a biggie for us. Based on their background, they are, as I said, broken in so many ways. So.
I mean, obviously, just looking at the issue of homelessness, I mean, you're just in New York alone. You were talking about
Correct.
The amount of homeless families that
right.
are in
right.
New York. But it's obviously a big issue in the United States and a
right.
big issue
right.
in a city like New York
right.
as well.
Right. Right.
You know, is it a case that the mayor of New York, whoever's in charge, is doing their best, or is it just so hard?
Well, right now, the mayor that we have right now is really working on a lot of low-income housing, which is a blessing. Because even our workers, the people that work for us, are struggling to make. We have two workers that rent a room because they can't afford an apartment. And if you're making minimum wage, it's impossible. Now, we just got a little increase in our minimum wage for our staff. But it's always hard what is the solution? Our mayor is working on the housing piece, also raising the minimum wage, which I think would be a biggie for people to be able to afford. So I think the city, but I do I think they can be doing more? Yes. Do I think they could be doing more? Do I have all the answers? No. But I know one big answer for us is that we have almost 50% of our women never finish school. We have two girls right now who only went to eighth grade. They have no job skills. You know, they don't have an education. So they're not going anywhere. So that's why we spend because I'm an educator myself. And the whole point of Sienna House originally was to help them to finish school. And so that we work a lot on that. And the women are... those when they come in, it's hard because sometimes we only have them a short moment. Do you know what I mean? We have some women that come one day and leave 2 days later because they just don't understand. They don't want to do rules. I had a girl tell me one time, I don't do rules.
I said, oh, it's too bad, because this is a world of rules, but it's a hard time sociologically. It's just tough, you know, for so many of these young. Well, we have mostly young. Average age is 22. So the youngest one we have right now is 19.
I wanted to come right back full circle from where we started. We were talking about the voices of faith, and I just wanted to do this. I was talking earlier to your colleagues here, and we were talking about just the amount of wonderful people that we've heard over the last few days, the people who have been telling their stories. How interesting is that for you to hear these stories, to be part, to be with these other women telling their stories?
It's wonderful because it, to me, is like a time to stretch, to really truly stretch your mind to the entire, to the world. And that when Mary Lou first asked me, I said, you know, the Bronx, there are people there from India, the Philippines, Africa, the Bronx, you know, how could that fit in here? But it's making me realize more and more that we, the women that I'm dealing with, are not unlike some of the women that are in India and Africa and wherever. It makes me feel part of this world and the struggle of the world. And the struggle of the world is pretty much in common, you know, with others. And so we have, and the solutions like nonviolence, you know, we talk about nonviolence, we talk about peace, we talk, and I hear it here, justice issues, and all of that, and it's, we're all involved in fighting for those causes. So it makes me feel part of, more part of the world.